Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, we just simply ran out of time with Tuesday's show. We didn't have enough time to get to all the callers. We didn't have enough time to get to all of the content. So there's a couple of things that I want to sneak on to the show this morning. Well, first, we do want to take your phone calls, especially if we missed you yesterday. We want to give you the opportunity to jump in on the open phone lines once again today here. We'll get to that here. Probably give us about, I don't know, well, you know what, hey, if you want to call in right now, I'll have a quick conversation coming up here in just a second, but then we can sneak in some of your phone calls. But the other thing that I want to get to here is, in addition to your phone calls, is I mentioned it yesterday, my phone started blowing up. All our friends in Scobie, the moment this happened, they were saying, hey, you got to see if you can get this guy on your radio show. He grew up in Scobie, Montana. He's a retired Green Beret Special Forces guy, and he just got sworn in here last week, I think it was, as the new Lieutenant Governor of Florida. Jay Collins is his name. Yeah, a bunch of friends in Scobie were messaging me the news after he just got sworn in by Governor Ron DeSantis to be his sidekick, his lieutenant governor. So I'll share some of the audio. Governor DeSantis actually did kind of a sit-down interview conversation with Jay Collins, his new lieutenant governor. So I want to play some of that audio for you here in just a few minutes. But first up, we're going to start here. Tomorrow we've got a special show live from the Western Congressional Caucus. The Western Congressional Caucus, several members of the U.S. House of Representatives are in the Flathead Valley of Montana this week for a series of meetings. They were looking at some aerial firefighting assets yesterday. They did a tour at Proof Research, incredible gun business in the Flathead Valley as well. I think they're off to Glacier National Park, meeting with the superintendent here later today. But several of those members will join us on tomorrow's show. But yesterday, I actually attended a couple of panel presentations at the Western Congressional Caucus meetings. And the keynote speaker was the chief of the entire U.S. Forest Service, Tom Schultz. I got a chance to catch up with Chief Schultz after his presentation yesterday. I'll share that audio coming up for you right after our first break this morning here on Montana Talks. But I chicken scratched just a few bullet points that stood out here. One was just talking about making our timber industry great again. I thought this was interesting. You know, we've had a lot of sawmills that have shut down in the past few decades as a result of these radical environmentalist policies and radical liberal judges like Don Malloy out of Missoula. What would it cost to build a new sawmill today to get these things back up and running again? $250 million is what the chief says it would cost to get a new sawmill up and running. What about access to timber? What about getting these mines up and running near Libby, Montana as well? Stand by. We'll start with my conversation with U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Schultz right after this quick break right here on Montana Talks.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. Great to be in person here in Whitefish with Tom Schultz, the chief of the U.S. Forest Service. Chief, we had a great time. We had you on the show back with Governor Gianforte when this big agreement was signed, but good to see you here in person. You know this turf here in Montana pretty well.
I do, and I'm looking forward to getting out and seeing folks again. I already met folks at Stoltz the other night, went to the Montana Logging Association today and met with those folks. It's great to be back. There's a lot of good things happening. The state's actually talking with the Forest Service today on how to implement that agreement.
I like to, well, and on that front, before I pivot to another topic, it's interesting because you said now the agreement that you and Governor Gianforte, the Trump team and Governor Gianforte have signed off on now, there's other states wanting to do the same thing across the country.
You bet. So Secretary Rollins has made it very clear that we're going to be working to promote rural America, and this is one one way to do that is working with the states to get jobs on the ground and get this work done. So we've got multiple states across the West that have seen that Montana agreement as a model, and they're wanting to do the same thing.
What did you want to communicate mostly today to this Western Caucus Foundation? You know, a lot of key policymakers, lawmakers in the House here.
I think the big takeaway is that this administration, particularly the secretary, they're about action, getting things done. So we're out there communicating, we're partnering with the right folks, we're going to get work done, we're going to get the right work done, we're going to protect communities, we're going to develop rural America, we're going to manage resources, whether it's grazing, whether it's timber, whether it's minerals, recreation, we're working for the American public to promote rural America and develop jobs.
You mentioned, speaking of getting work done, getting things going, you mentioned something called the Fast 41 rule when it comes to mining. How can we leverage things like that to get these mines up and running here, especially in the Libby area that's been so hard hit over the past few decades with the loss of mining and timber jobs?
So Hecla has actually made a proposal. They've got two mines that they want to include in the process. So their mine in Libby is one that they've included on their exploration. So we are. That process creates a lot of transparency, creates predictability for the mining companies, creates a timeline that everybody agrees to. So we should see that delivering results for the companies, for America as we go forward.
One of the, I thought, the most interesting stories that you shared today, also showing your Montana background here in the forest, in forestry and more. You talked about St. Regis, Montana, and what that forest should be seeing every year in terms of the board feet that should be coming out of there compared to what had been coming out of there. I guess, tell us, you know, recap what you told this congressional audience today.
Yeah, so every forest plan has every forest plan has an allowable sale quantity, and they also have a sustainability. That forest could easily produce 80 million feet a year. Historically, that forest has probably been in the 30 to 40 range, so we're working to get close to that allowable sale quantity across the board so that that forest can step up. The problem we have right now is there was a mill in St. Regis. That mill is no longer there, right? And so by us providing that supply, that steady supply and predictability, we hope to lure businesses back to make those investments.
Yeah, I think you said to get a new mill up and running today, $250 million, I think you said. So that's a big investment. Other than that, Chief Tom Schultz, the Chief of the U.S. Forest Service, what's the most exciting news happening in Trump Forest Service world since the last time we caught up with you once you signed that agreement with Governor Gianforte?
You know, I think we're excited about working through the roadless rural discussion. I think that was since that last time we met, so that's a big one for us as we go forward, and we're focused on that. And we're just focused on getting out on the ground, communicating with people effectively, and getting work done.
Chief, great to see you. Thanks for taking some time.
You bet. Thanks, Aaron.
Oh yeah, that was
all right. Now I know the audio was a little hard to hear there, so I apologize for that, but important audio to hear nonetheless, so that's why I still wanted to share that with you. Yeah, usually my microphone will cut out some of that background noise when I have my sports headsets with me there, so I apologize about the background noise. But some other notes that I scribbled down here that stood out from the Forest Service Chief's talk in Whitefish yesterday. He closed by talking about the repeal of the roadless initiative, which is such great news for Montana, especially Western Montana. But as he pointed out yesterday, the roadless rule doesn't only harm access and the timber industry in Western Montana. There's a lot of roadless areas, even out there in the grasslands, in the upper Great Plains in particular as well. But he was saying yesterday, they did an inventory of all of the roadless lands across America. 24 million acres of the roadless lands are within a mile of the wildland urban interface. So basically they've taken these access roads to help fight fire or just for you to have access to go hunting, you name it. 24 million acres of that roadless inventory is within a mile of homes. And so clearly this was an effort by the left and by the radical environmentalists and leftist judges like Don Malloy in Missoula and by the Democrat Party to clearly lock people out of accessing their so-called public lands. I mean, it's very clear. And not only that, but they also it was also a deliberate way to target and destroy the timber industry in America as well. Speaking of the timber industry in America as well, another point that he made is that Region 1, and Region 1 has been headquartered in Missoula, Montana, the most litigated region of all of the Forest Service regions in America. And again, you can thank left-wing federal judges like Don Molloy for that one. And then people wonder why they want to move Region 1 out of Missoula, the Region 1 headquarters out of Missoula. Well, you can thank Judge Donald Molloy for his attacks on our timber industry and his attacks on the Forest Service, right? The other thing he said, I think this was out of Oregon. He highlighted a case out of Oregon where they wouldn't let him do logging, they wouldn't let him do fuel reduction efforts because of spotted owl habitat. And then 50% of the spotted owl habitat got burned up by fires. So I guess the environmentalists are okay with the fires taking out spotted owl habitat. They just don't want loggers to have the chance to go in and actually improve the habitat and also mitigate the fire effect. All right, stand by. Back after this.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, if you go to MontanaTalks.com right now, you'll see this headline amongst several others. Scobie native Green Beret sworn in as Florida's new lieutenant governor. We'll get to that story here in just a second. But first, want to sneak on some of your phone calls since we just ran out of time yesterday during the open phones portion of the show. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin in Billings on the phone lines. Kevin, thanks for the call. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, Aaron, it's great to be with you on the radio. Have you heard about this alleged, and I have to say alleged, because I don't know the whole story. I don't know if we all do, but supposedly Kash Patel gave an award to an FBI agent, or several, I guess, that were in charge of shooting at Lavoy Finicum. I know that this is an old story, the whole Lavoy Finicum issue, but it's going all over social media. Apparently this happened in July, and the Finicum family sent out a press release yesterday, and Maxine Bernstein picked this story up from the Oregonian on August 16th, I believe is what it was. Have you heard anything about this?
You know, I haven't. Yeah, that deals with, was that standoff at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon?
Yeah, it was. Well, I call it a siege because there was no guns pointed at, you know, both each other. But yeah, you're right. It was at the Malheur Refuge, yeah.
Yeah, that was
him and Bundy was involved. And
yeah, how many years ago was that now? No, I hadn't heard about this one. The latest story that I'd seen about it, FBI Director Kash Patel, is I know he fired three senior FBI officials who had basically been a part of the deep state operation over the past few years and, you know, a part of weaponizing the FBI against the American people and against Trump and things like that. But I hadn't seen this story yet.
Yeah, I can send it to you. Go ahead and send it to you. It's not getting a lot of attention, and I don't want to jump to conclusions because I talked to Cliven Bundy last night because, you know, Em and Bundy, Lavoy Finicum, that whole crowd was involved in this. I talked to Cliven. He just said, don't get too excited. It could be AI, but it is bothersome that this is even going around, and something is fishy, and we need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it's kind of like anything on the internet. You gotta be skeptical of anything you see, but sometimes it can be good leads for information, but you always got to confirm and verify. So are you getting Bundy on your Rocky Mountain Freedom Zone podcast then? You mentioned talking to him yesterday.
Well, I'm going to have a spokesman for the Finicums, Mark Herr, who, by the way, made a documentary about the whole entire siege over there at the Malheur Refuge. It was pretty intense. I don't know if you saw this, Aaron. I'm sure you did. Remember that YouTube video that Gavin Syme put out? And he was streaming thing where Michelle Fury and others were trying to get everybody to settle down and just go to jail and let the system take care of it. I guess Mark made a whole documentary, a six-series documentary on this, six-part documentary.
Oh, interesting. Well, send that my way as well.
I'm going to try and have
Yeah, send that my way as well if you can. Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. I know it's been a few years, and yeah, we'll see if you can track down if this is just AI pushing something your way, or if there's some news to this story as well. Kevin, thanks for the phone call. Great to hear from you. I see we've got some other callers on the phone lines here. Go ahead. Let's see. Why don't you send Frank and Evergreen down to me there, Caden? We'll get to Frank and Evergreen next up here on the phone lines. We're working with our new system here. Okay, looks like we got Frank with us now. Frank, what's on your mind this morning? Thanks for the call.
Good morning, Aaron. Yeah, what's on my mind is the helium production. We're supposed to be the new the Golden Triangle up there in Hill Tool and Liberty County. And however, there hasn't been anything produced yet. In order to get helium out of the ground, you need kind of a decomposition down at a base rock of a mixture of thorium and uranium. However, there isn't enough thorium or thorite in that area to make it work. I don't know how they're doing it, but they did discover some a couple of years back. They went and re-drilled in the same spot, but it was called a dry flush. They couldn't find any. And then they did another wildcat drill down by, down by Rosebud in that area there. And same thing, they found it before, but they couldn't find it again. However, what's interesting is last year in 2024, the federal government sold off the reserves for helium. And it's very precious stuff. I mean, we need it for cooling nuclear reactors.
It's worth a lot of money. It's worth a lot of money. So where did you get this latest? What's your source for this information about the exploration regarding helium, especially in, you know, the Shelby, Montana area?
I've been calling all these companies and then the drillers, et cetera, and just finding this information on my own.
Interesting. Well, man, that's another potential good lead here, because I did a story back in May of 2023 where they were talking about helium being the new gold rush in Montana's Golden Triangle. And let's see, what did they tell me back then? I talked with Don Lee in Shelby. We had a number of other great guests on the program, but they were, you know, talking about helium exploration. I mean, and just back then, I'm trying to look at the specific numbers. Yeah, back then they were saying that refined helium would go anywhere from $600 to $1,000 per 1,000 cubic feet. And that's why they were calling it the new gold rush of the Golden Triangle. So that's a good reminder, at least, that I need to do an update on that story to see what's all going on up there. All right, Frank, thanks for the call. Caden, go ahead and send us our next caller. I think we've got Lee in Kalispell on the phone lines. Go ahead and send us Lee. We'll sneak him on here as well. All right, let's see. I think we've got Lee now with us. Lee in Kalispell, what's on your mind?
Yes, I heard this a few years ago about the spotted owl. It turned out that the lumber industry didn't have any effect on the spotted owl. It was actually, there's another type of owl that has a genetic dominance, and when they were breeding with the spotted owl, it turned into their type of owl, the young.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right, Lee. So, yeah, remember back in the 90s, it was Hammer Pants, it was Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby, and it was the Spotted Owl. The Spotted Owl was the tool of choice to attack the timber industry. Oh, the logging is killing spotted owls. It's killing spotted owl habitat. And then PERC, the Bozeman-based PERC, was the first to expose this. They had a big report that said, actually, you know what? And they used, I think, Fish and Wildlife Service documents in this report. You know why the spotted owl is going away? Because the striped owl or the barred owl is mating with the spotted owl. And so when the striped owl mates with the spotted owl and has offspring, The wildlife authorities did not consider the offspring to be spotted owl. They considered the offspring to be the striped owl or the barred owl. And so that's why the spotted owl was going away. So it was going away by the natural mating process or by the out-of-control wildfires that liberal judges forced to take place in the first place, right? Yeah, and then, of course, Frank, that's or Lee, that's another one of those surprise, surprise, surprise types of stories. Yeah, nobody is surprised when you hear that, are you? And we knew that, I think 20 years ago we had the reports from PERC. Somewhere around 20 years ago we had the reports from outfits like PERC and others saying that this is what happened, that the striped owl was mating with the spotted owl. And yet when the Biden regime came into power, they started pushing the same talking points again and got exposed about the mating habits of owls all over again. It's just constant craziness. You just can't make this stuff up here. It's just some of the silliness that we have seen out of these, you know, federal land management agencies, you know, under the Biden regime or under the Obama regime, et cetera. And it's just, it's all of these things that Donald J. Trump is working now and fighting now to try to fix. All right, let's see. I got to get to a couple of things here. One, I want to get to the audio, the back and forth with Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, along with his new lieutenant governor of Florida, Jay Collins, a Green Beret who grew up in Scobie, Montana. Plus, speaking of Green Berets, we got another great Green Beret Montanan who's going to be with us on the phone lines here. Actually, if you can send that call down to me, Caden, send Sean Gifford our direction. We'll get him in the queue here next. All right, there we go. Yeah, I saw a cool story. I think it was actually a KPAX story. KPAX TV or KRTV, one of them had it. But a Montana Green Beret veteran and Purple Heart recipient was recently honored at the White House by President Trump. A Montana Purple Heart recipient honored at the White House, and it's our friend Sean Gifford. Sean Gifford, a great guy, Green Beret veteran. He's got the V42 Fitness Gym along with his wife Kira in Three Forks, Montana. He was serving as mayor of Three Forks for a while as well, so a great guy. We're going to talk with Sean Gifford coming up here right after this quick break. Talk about his visit to the White House and his broader message of recognizing some incredible American heroes and the people he's working to get some recognition for. So stand by. We'll get to Sean Gifford right after this. Let's see. During the break, I'll check the messages on the Montana Talks app in the meantime as well.
This is where Montana Talks at. With Lane Nordlund.
A coalition of agriculture groups are filing an amicus brief with the United States Supreme Court calling for a definitive ruling on the legality of corner crossing. The Wyoming Stock Growers, Montana Stock Growers, and Wyoming Wool Growers Association filed that brief. The case centers around the debate involving hunters who used a ladder to cross one section of public land to another at the corner of private land in Wyoming. Earlier this year, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that corner crossing does not constitute trespass if no private land is physically touched. Rayleigh Honeycutt, executive vice president of the Montana Stock Growers, say they are petitioning the Supreme Court to review that decision.
We have proudly joined the Wyoming Stock Growers and Wyoming Wool Growers Associations to ask the Supreme Court of the United States to take up this case and provide us a definitive answer on corner crossings. Our appeal really highlights to the court the landowner's perspective and also the importance of the landowner's right and ability to protect their airspace and their land.
The precedent directly affects six western states, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Kansas, and indirectly influences landlocked public areas across the West. That decision was applauded by outdoor groups like the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. That's your Ag News. I'm Lane Norton.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into it here. Great to have Green Beret veteran Sean Gifford back with us here on Montana Talks. Sean, I think we've had you on the show wearing all sorts of different hats over the years. We've talked with you about, you know, how you volunteered for Warriors in Quiet Waters. We talked to you when you were the mayor of Three Forks. We talked to you about your V42 fitness gym in Three Forks. And anyway, great to have you back on the show, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aaron.
Yeah, and then, of course, your wife, Kira, she does so much work, not only, you know, as a military spouse and a business owner as well, but she's a, you know, strong supporter of the Mason Moore Foundation and all they do for our first responders. So just can't say enough about the Gifford family. Yeah, I saw this headline. I wish you would have called us from the White House. I saw this great news headline that you are recognized and honored back at the White House by President Trump. I think this was for National Purple Heart Day, if I remember right.
That is correct, yeah. The White House was gracious enough. They hosted about 100 Purple Heart recipients in the East Wing of the White House. So President Trump could sign into law that August 7th is National Purple Heart Day.
What was it like being there and just being in the room and, you know, being there amongst other Purple Heart recipients?
It was fantastic. They were gracious hosts to all of us. Secret Service is top notch. It was just an amazing experience to be able to sit in the room with, you know, the history and the honor and the valor of all these other veterans that were there.
Who did you get a chance to chat with yourself? What did you get a chance to talk about?
SecDef Pete Hegseth was sworn, but Tulsi Gabbard, she made some time and came out and chatted with us. I was with a group. I had another Montana veteran with me, a former teammate. And then she was nice enough. She came out and chatted with us and took a picture with us.
Very cool. Well, I know... sounds like a big part of why you wanted to make the trip back there, not just to be in the room, not just to be at the White House with President Trump and some of the other administration folks and your fellow Purple Heart recipients, but really you're continuing to fight for your fellow service members, continuing to fight for your fellow veterans, and for some to get them the recognition they deserve when it comes to medals and things like that. What's the message you want to get out today?
So I have a few different guys. So I have three members of my team that were injured in the same incident, and then for some reason their Purple Hearts have been hung up somewhere in some office at Human Resources Command somewhere, and they've been kicked back. So we're trying to fight that, get them resubmitted, and this is 8 years in the making now, still dealing with this. And then additionally, and I know you know, like when we deploy, we usually get a squad or two of infantry attached to our teams. But once they leave me, I have no oversight on what awards they receive. So a lot of those guys still haven't been awarded their CIBs from 8 years ago. And then some of them are ETSing, some of them are trying to get promoted, and they earned them. So I'm hoping to get that done.
Well, yeah, that's a huge deal. The CIB, for those who don't know, is the Combat Infantryman badge. And, you know, if you went through Fort Benning like me and others, that's a huge deal to have that CIB. And it's crazy that 8 years later that still hasn't happened. I think I remember the incident you're talking about because we were kind of under the same umbrella unit. You guys were in the thick of it in Afghanistan at the time. We were in another location, and it was just gut-wrenching to hear about the hits you guys were taking. And you know, and I mean, I'd been in Afghanistan before on another deployment, but man, it's like we wish we were right there with you guys, given everything that you were facing. And so it's frustrating to hear that you're still fighting to get some of those guys taken care of.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me come on here and get the word out. And then there's one more special guy I'd like to talk to. When I was up there, I ran into Robert Zachary. He was a TAC key with the initial invasion in Afghanistan, assigned to 5th Group. And he introduced me to Major Capers. He's being resubmitted for his Medal of Honor. Congressman Ralph Norman from South Carolina is really pushing it in the House, but it's another. It's just hung up in red tape and bureaucratic mess. And then we're hoping that the SecDef and POTUS can really cut through the red tape and get Major Capers the Medal of Honor he deserves.
So I would imagine that our congressional delegation, that maybe they could assist with both of these efforts. They could jump in on board with the Major Capers issue, get to fight for the medal there, but also any issues that you might be having to get your guys recognized. Is it a breakthrough at the DOD? Is it casework through members of Congress? I'd imagine there's something our congressional delegation could do.
And I'm hoping so, and that's why I'm glad you had me on here. So I know a lot of influential people listen to your talk show here in the state. And I know Senator Sheehy has signed off on Major Capers, the little petition that was sent up for Major Capers to get his Medal of Honor. But, yeah, I'm just hoping somebody has some connection somewhere and can help us out and we can get these soldiers the recognition they deserve.
Well, yeah, no, I'm glad you came on because I not only wanted to talk about your White House visit, but also, yeah, give you the opportunity to share with Montanans whatever it is you want to share. No, this is important. On top of being with us on the show today, Sean, if you can, shoot me an email or send me information, and I'd be happy to share that with our congressional delegation folks. I know you know many of them well as well, but whatever we can do to help amplify that and make sure that's moving forward. That's why we're here.
I appreciate it, Aaron.
All right. Sean Gifford, thanks for your continued service. Thanks for keeping up the fight. God bless you. An honor to have you on the show.
All right. Thank you for having me, Aaron.
All right. Maybe we'll see you at Warrior Taste Fest coming up here next month. We got a chance to catch up with the Warriors and Quiet Waters crew. Oh, wait. Are you still there? Did you hang up yet, Sean?
No, I'm still here, Aaron.
You got a haircut for your White House trip. I was wondering what happened. I was wondering what happened to the tree-hugging, hippie, long-haired, fly-fishing guide hairdo you had going before. All of a sudden, you were like clean cut again. I don't know what happened.
And then to my wife's dismay, I shaved the mustache. So
you got rid of the mustache.
Gone now. Yeah, the wife is talking to me again, so we're good.
That's right. Household six. You got to pay attention to the boss, that's for sure. All right. Thanks for your service. Thanks again for joining us on the show. Okay, let's sneak in another caller here. We were talking about the spotted owl. We were talking with the Forest Service chief and more. Do we still have Greg in White Sulphur Springs on the phone lines? Caden, do we still have him or did we lose him? We might have lost his phone call. Okay, we lost his phone call. I guess Greg in White Sulphur Springs had a funny spotted owl story to share with us here. Well, Greg, if you call back in a few minutes, we should be able to sneak you on before we run out of time. Speaking of Green Berets, we just talked with Sean Gifford, a Green Beret veteran that I had the honor to serve with. I'm not a Green Beret, but served in a similar Special Forces unit as him. And what an honor, by the way. But another Montana Green Beret, Jay Collins. Well, I don't need to tell you anything because Florida Governor Ron DeSantis can deliver the news for you here. Let me make sure I've got the right input queued up. All right, here we go.
Gentlemen, Florida's new lieutenant governor is named Jay Collins. He's a decorated Green Beret, having served 23 years on active duty, was involved in a lot of campaigns. He earned a lot of military decorations, ranging from the Bronze Star to the Legion of Merit. He was also wounded in action and was awarded the Purple Heart, which obviously when you're in Special Forces, that is kind of the cost of doing business, and that can happen. What somewhat unique about Jay is he ended up losing one of his legs as a result of his service, and rather than take a medical retirement, which he was entitled to, he decided to re-up and serve five more years as a Green Beret with a prosthetic leg. And he's continued to exude service above self in Florida as a state senator and has been one of our most productive Florida senators. He's also, prior to becoming lieutenant governor, was a leader in a hurricane relief organization that would immediately be there in the aftermath of these major hurricanes, providing food and nutrition for first responders as well as displaced residents. And he even is expeditionary when Florida's doing things overseas, like rescue people from Israel you know, he's on the ground doing it and doing it very well. And so you're going to be able to learn a little bit more about him today. So welcome to the Executive Office of the Governor for the first time with you being Lieutenant Governor.
Well, thank you, Governor. I appreciate it. Pretty exciting couple days here. Thank you for, first, your trust in the opportunity to do this, and looking forward to this podcast. It'll be good to tell some stories here and fill in some of those blanks.
Well, we did your announcement at this team house in South Tampa.
Yeah, we'll hold it right there. We got to take a quick break here on Montana Talks, and a little bit of the conversation between Governor DeSantis and Scobey, Montana's own Jay Collins. I'll get to that right after this.
Montana.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Silver Springs just has a very quick, funny story about the spotted owl. We were talking about the timber industry and the spotted owl and more earlier in the show. Greg in White Silver Springs got a quick story, so we'll just we'll sneak him on and then go back to the Ron DeSantis audio here in just a second. Let's see. Yeah, Greg, go ahead. Great to hear from you.
Yeah, years ago when the spotted owl thing was blowing up real big in Oregon, I happened to be driving through, I don't remember how long, 30, 40 years ago. Anyway, I stopped in a little tavern that was all full of loggers, and so I went to go to the bathroom, and on the door of the bathroom, there was a sign that said, "Wood and paper products no longer available. Wipe your ass with a spotted owl."
Oh, man. Yeah, you can see that one happening, too. We know you're not making that story up. Yeah, that's a great one. Well, Greg, thanks for calling back in. I'm glad we were able to sneak you on here. All these people that you know, use all of these products, but, you know, same thing with the petroleum business, right? Look at all these left-wing protesters protesting oil, yet there they are with their protest signs made of petroleum. All right, Greg, thanks for the call. Okay, so I'm just going to play a portion of this audio. If you go to MontanaTalks.com, you can see the full interview, the full back and forth with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and his new Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, a Green Beret from Scobey, Montana. And by the way, I am working to get him on the show here one of these days to join us. I was texting him, actually, thanks to a friend in Scobey last night. So who knows? Maybe we'll get him here on the show. But one of the things he was talking with Ron DeSantis about was how he actually became a Green Beret, you know, a kid from Scobey becoming a Green Beret. Let me see if I got it queued up in the right spot. All right, here we go.
Becoming a Green Beret, when I went through, you didn't have a high school into the Green Berets program. Now, the X-ray program, as that's known now, lets a few people through early on just to fill the ranks out and inject a little youth, a little, more physicality, some young bucks, so to speak, right? When I went through, most of the people have been in 5-6 years. You've been in the Army. You've done very well. You're in the top few percent of your MOS, your job skills. And then you go to selection, SFAS. We used to jokingly call the School for Advanced Suffering. It's a hoot, right? I went through an ice storm class where trees were freezing, breaking, falling on people. It was great. I mean, with God's grace, I was blessed to be selected. I got to be an 18 Delta. I went through the next 2.5, almost 3 years of the Special Forces qualification course to become a Special Forces medic. But that's the easy part. You get there, you get to a team, and now you're kind of in a probationary role. You got 1 year really to prove yourself, show that you can earn it, show that you belong to the team, or you kind of get pushed aside a little bit, and the op tempo is crazy. Everyone hears about the ops, the gunfights, jumping out of planes, all the fun, exciting stuff. What they don't hear about is the things you're alluding to, the hours and hours of training, time at the range, honing your craft, making sure your equipment is pristine, that you understand the area of operation and the area of interest that you're going into, both from a language standpoint, an endemic disease, and a risk factor standpoint, and then just working with your foreign counterparts as you go into some of those missions. The preparation time is incredible. And any time you deploy, you have multiple training iterations before that. So if you're going to be gone for 8 months, you can bet you're going to have probably 30 to 60 days of training prior to that. And then you had Afghanistan and Iraq, and you come back and you go to South America when I was the 7th group with about 3 or 4 months in between. So it's a quick turn. You're doing a lot of things. It's like strapping onto a rocket ship sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the Green Berets, I think, came into being after World War II, I think sometime in like the early 50s, Navy SEALs under Jack Kennedy in the early 60s. And, you know, obviously, you know, World War II was our biggest, you know, modern conflict. But then now, kind of in the GWAD era and the post 9/11, I mean, so much is put on the shoulders of special forces. And it's almost like, I think, like, politicians are like, well, we can just send special forces. That doesn't somehow count as deploying. Like, it's only boots on the ground if it's conventional forces and not special forces, which I always thought was crazy to say that, but that was kind of the way it was. So you're going, and it's constant deployments, and especially over those years in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's hard enough doing the duty, but then, you know, you have family, you have all these other things, and there was a lot of weight that was placed on the shoulders of those folks over those years.
Yeah, you know, Governor, there sure were. And you're hitting a key point. Your family serves alongside you. It is incredibly difficult. It takes an inordinate amount of just pressure and peace and trust from your family and a lot of grace, because there's so many times when you are told with short notice you're going to go to a country, you're not sure when you're going to be back, things are going to change, and the family just has to adapt. You know, your wife and your children end up doing a lot of things without you. You miss a lot of those times. And, you know, that's something we don't talk about enough, frankly. And it's one of those things where I always talk about being quiet or silent. Don't be silent. Talk about these facts. So I'm glad we can do that here. You know,
all right, there you go. Yeah, that is Jay Collins, the new lieutenant governor of Florida, who born and raised in Scobie. Check out the full story. Check out that full. I think it's like an hour-long chat there with DeSantis and Collins. Full thing is posted at MontanaTalks.com. For Thursday's show, we got a great show coming up for you on Thursday. The Congressional Western Caucus. Several members of Congress are in the Flathead Valley right now as we speak. A few of those members will join us on Thursday's Montana Talks, talking about all these big Western issues, from public lands, fires, firefighting, wolves, grizzlies, you name it. That's what's coming up on Thursday's Montana Talks. So, that will be live from Whitefish with the Western Congressional Caucus coming up on Thursday.